On Sunday morning, December 14th, a car packed with explosives blew up outside the police station in the Iraqi city of Qaldiyah, about a 90-minute drive from Baghdad. The death toll included 24 policemen, two civilian women, and a child. Later that morning, American authorities announced the capture of Saddam Hussein, and news of the blast at the police station in Qaldiyah virtually disappeared from television screens and radio airwaves. Army Major John Nagle is an expert on waging war against insurgents, and he was one of the first American soldiers on the scene in Qaldiyah that Sunday morning, 4 weeks ago. Nagle is also the subject of a story by Peter Moss in today's New York Times Sunday magazine. Professor Nagle's War examines the challenges of counterinsurgency. Peter Moss joins us from our New York bureau. Good morning, Peter.
Good to be with you.
You set up your piece by citing various authorities on war, including T.E. Lawrence, who's better known as Lawrence of Arabia, and how he plotted to fight the Turks. How did he perceive the two sides in this style of fighting?
He perceived basically the Turkish rulers who he was fighting against as a classic conventional army that was somewhat immobile, that was like a plant that needed a long roots to be supplied from and that were vulnerable, whereas the insurgents that he led were like, as he described it, a vapor, everywhere and nowhere at the same time and untouchable by the conventional forces.
So it's easy to see then the advantages for the army that's conducting an insurgency, basically, you know, create a state of fear, a state of insecurity in the enemy. But then how does a traditional army then deal with that challenge?
That's the, you know, the $64 million question, because the conventional strategies of, you know, using a large amount of firepower that you direct at your enemy is really impossible to use when your enemy is nowhere to be seen and when your enemy is hiding amongst civilians. And this is why the record of counterinsurgency in the last century and before that, I mean, Julius Caesar also had trouble with the Britons who used these kinds of tactics. The record is really quite poor.
Tell us a little bit about Professor Nagle.
He is 37 years old. He graduated virtually at the top of his class from West Point, and then he was selected as a Rhodes Scholar, went to Oxford, studied there for 2 years, and then returned to America to active duty just in time to command a tank platoon during the Gulf War, for which he earned a Bronze Star. And then after that, he returned to Oxford to work on his Ph.D., and his Ph.D., and this was during the late 1990s, he was focusing on counterinsurgency, which really very few people were focusing on at the time. And then he finished the Ph.D., and it was published as a book last year. And he went back into active duty in the Army, and the tank battalion, of which he was third in command, was sent to Iraq in September.
So Nagle studies insurgency and counterinsurgency, and he knows some things intellectually. Now he is in Iraq, and one of the first things that he did when he was in Iraq was try to build up an alliance with the local police chief. But these kinds of relations actually have been depicted as rather, you know, cynical alliances with apparatchiks, to use an old Soviet word, of Saddam Hussein's regime. Why was it important for Nagle to make that kind of alliance?
It was important, not just obviously for him, but actually for every American commander in Iraq, to make alliances with the police and to also work with these new security forces that are being created. Because, and this is one of the lessons of counterinsurgency, it really is the indigenous forces, and that's what local forces are called, that in the end are going to win the battle, because no foreign force can really understand everything as well as locals can. They don't speak the language. They don't understand inflections. They don't even understand body language terribly well. And therefore, it's local forces that in the end are going to be able to get the best information and act on it most quickly.
Is it as easy as it sounds?
If only it were. Everything that he tried to do in Iraq and that he's doing now has turned out to be much more difficult than he anticipated, even though he, of course, knew just how difficult insurgency was. With the police, for example, when his unit arrived in Qaldiyah, they went to the police station to go out on a joint patrol, on their first joint patrol. And as the American Humvees rolled up to the police station, the police were running out the back windows because they were terrified of going out onto the streets with the occupiers because the local population would look on them as collaborators.
So how is the U.S. Army doing in conducting its own counterinsurgency warfare?
Well, I talked to this one official in the CPA, the Coalition Provisional Authority, who had been deeply involved in counterinsurgency efforts in the past, particularly in El Salvador. And, you know, he said to me, look, what we really need here are three divisions of the special forces. In other words, 60,000 or so special forces soldiers. Well, there just aren't that many. And what he was saying, or what he meant to say by that, is that we do need a greater cultural awareness. We do need to have people who blend in with the local population much more than the soldiers who are here now are doing. And we do need to be much more careful in the use of force. You've got to use enough force to kill the enemy, or to capture the enemy, or to scare the enemy so that the enemy kind of begins to think, look, maybe this isn't such a good thing for me to be doing because I'm going to wind up dead. But on the other hand, you don't want to use so much force that what you're doing is killing the wrong people or shooting at the wrong people or angering the wrong people so that they become insurgents or so that they support the insurgents. During the Vietnam War, this was pointed out quite prophetically by Colonel John Paul Vaughn, who was a very kind of famous military dissident in the early years. And what he said at the time was that the perfect weapon for counterinsurgency is a knife. And the worst weapon is artillery or bombs from planes, because you have to know who you're killing.
On that Sunday morning 4 weeks ago, what was the reaction among Nagel's troops to the news that Saddam Hussein had been captured?
It was really interesting because there wasn't the level of celebration that I expected. I was at his base when the news came through. I actually kind of, you know, brought it to them first because my photographer called me up and told me about it. And I at first thought that they were just going to be kind of like slapping each other on the back, and I didn't see that. And what I saw instead was people who were just continuing to go about their business. They hardly stopped to watch the news on CNN, and there was this one soldier who I stopped and I asked him, you know, well, do you think the capture of Saddam is going to make your job any easier? And he just immediately said no. He said there are a lot of bad people out there, and they don't need Saddam Hussein telling them to do bad things.
Peter Moss is a contributing writer at the New York Times Sunday Magazine. His story on the counterinsurgency war in Iraq, Professor Nagel's War, appears in today's issue. He joined us from our New York bureau. Peter, thanks very much.
Thank you.